You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas, the Hot Texas Ring Rhythm Band, from our friend Alex Dormont.
Right here. And we are so delighted that you're joining us, whether you're here live or you're picking this up later. This is episode 171.
Can you believe roll that? Right by,
171. Yeah. And we are just so delighted you're with us. And Jim, where are we broadcasting from tonight?
Where are we broadcasting from? Uh-huh. It's September 1883, and we were on a dirt road heading to Santa Fe. A big black carriage with six black horses just passed by. There are human skulls attached to the corners of the carriage. Bobby, did you see the driver? I'm not sure he had a head.
I
don't think it's going to be a good day.
I did see the driver, and he didn't have a head. But I think that carriage was created by tonight's featured guest. Please welcome Thomas D. Claggett. Hello, Tom. Tom, can you hear us? Hello, Tom. Tom, can you hear us?
I don't think Tom can.
Oh, Tom, let's see. Tom, is your mic muted by chance? Hello, Tom. I'm not sure what's happened. We are talking about his book tonight, The River Ghost. And we have Tom on screen, and I'm not sure. Let's see. Sam, does it appear that Tom's mic is muted? No. Okay. Let's see. No, we're good. There's Tom. Hello. Tom, can you hear us? You can't hear us? Can you go back to StreamYard? Can you click through and come in again to the studio? We're hoping that Tom will come right back in. You know, this is the real world. We are live. We don't edit or anything. We're hoping that he will come back in to the StreamYard link. In the meantime, we are talking about this amazing book tonight, The River Ghost. It is Tom's latest book. Yeah. Oh, another one I could not put down.
You were kind of reading this thing on the midnight train to Santa Fe, weren't you?
I was reading it on the train, and it was so much fun because the main character, Catherine, happened to get on the train in 1883 in Pittsburgh, and she was traveling to Santa Fe, and so were we. And so we were passing places that she was passing in the book, which was just way too much fun. I'm looking to see about Tom. Sam, should I? Sam is in the chat room, and he is our engineer and producer, and he always knows just what to do. Sam, should I give Thomas a call? I don't know. Let's see. Where is my phone?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. I could see you all talking, but
yeah,
we know. I couldn't hear you.
Thomas, it's absolutely fine because I think there were spirits out there that were just having a little fun with us tonight.
I wouldn't be surprised.
This is getting kind of scary, isn't it?
So while we were waiting and Tom Claggett is back, with us. So while we were waiting for Tom to come back on, Tom, I had already done my first swoon over this book. I had shared that Catherine, the main character, was riding a train in 1883 from Pittsburgh, and I was on a train heading where she was heading, Santa Fe, and could not put this book down. I read it all the way through. 26-hour train ride did not take me, believe me, you know, that long to read it. I read it late into the night when I was just looking in my phone for enough light to keep it going.
Thank you very much.
Congratulations, yeah. Tom. This is a great book. I think, Jim, do you want to go ahead and get a little started with Tom's
bio? We have a bio here.
Yeah.
Thomas E. Claggett. Thomas Claggett spent more than 20 years as an assistant film editor in Hollywood. His credits include The Two Jacks, Jack Nicholson's sequels to Chinatown, Two Jakes, rather, and the television series St. Elsewhere. He's also an award-winning historical fiction and Gothic Western author. His novels include the Gothic Western Bloodvest and the historical novels Line of Glory, West of Penance, and The Pursuit of Marietta. Writing honors include two gold Will Rogers Medallion Awards, a Best Historical Fiction New Mexico Arizona Book Award, and a Spur Finalist Award for the Western Writers of America.
Yeah.
Very good. And you also do a column in this magazine, The Western Writers of America.
Yes, since your career started in Hollywood, it only makes sense, right, Tom? And we've just bookmarked, you have a wonderful column in each magazine called Western Video, and you review with great information and clarity and obviously joy, you review a video. Yeah. And we've begun to think, oh, we need to watch these videos that Tom recommends.
Thank you very, very much.
So, welcome, welcome. Mm-hmm. Well, as Jim had in the bio, as you had shared with us, you started in Hollywood. And that is always so interesting. Would you like to tell us a little bit about maybe your first job, your first years in Hollywood? We'd love to hear.
Sure. Thank you. I started in Hollywood in 1979 at Mary Tyler Moore Productions. I was running the Xerox room. And part of my responsibility was to Xerox the scripts for all of the shows, as you know, that would be shooting each week. At that time, they included Lou Grant, Remington Steele, Hill Street Blues, The White Shadow, St. Elsewhere. And it was, it kept me busy. And it was also a terrific opportunity because I read all of the scripts that I had to make copies of. And it was a terrific opportunity, as I say, because it allowed me to come to understand story structure, mm-hmm. and also writing dialogue. Mm-hmm. So much of the time, dialogue is just a line or two, not speeches. Mm-hmm. So it was entertaining and educational.
Yeah.
I assume you ran into all sorts of actors, Angie, from the set, right?
Every now and then.
Okay.
There were a few.
Yeah.
It was hard not to.
Sure. And there was a wide range of scripts there. So there were comedies, and there were dramas and hospital shows. And I mean, a lot of different genres within that body of work.
Absolutely. New Heart, WKRP in Cincinnati, Rhoda was still on the air.
Oh, Rhoda.
Yeah. Yeah. So it just ended.
Rhoda.
Okay.
But, yeah. Oh, this is taking me back.
Yeah. It's taking us back, too.
And I think that was the golden age of the sitcom, yes. So then you... and at some point you became a writer. Were you always writing from when you were young, or when did you pick up a pen or a computer or a tablet or whatever and begin writing, Tom?
It was probably back in high school. for, you know, subject, you know, you have to write a report or an essay. I was very comfortable doing it. And I thought this might be the way to go. I studied journalism in college and realized very quickly that making a career out of freelance writing wasn't probably going to happen. Mm-hmm. So the job in the Xerox room came along at just the right time.
Thank you.
I know you must have a question.
Well, yeah, with that when you started writing, when did you were kind of working with Western historical fiction, and then you sort of moved over to Gothic Westerns. Mm. Kind of what was that about?
That wasn't intentional. It was because I came across what I thought was a terrific story to tell.
Again.
And that's the thing that drives me, I think probably drives all writers. I found an article while I was researching something else, and it was about, in the terms of the River Ghost, it was about Henry James's short story, The Turn of the Screw. Yeah. And I was familiar with it, and suddenly it came into my head that this story about a young English woman who is hired to become a governess for two children at an English country manor home, where a couple of ghosts may or may not be, suddenly seemed like a really good idea to transfer to the Old West. And The River Ghost is the result.
Yeah, that's so good. So for our audience that maybe isn't exactly familiar with a goth, like what does a gothic novel, can you just share a few of the elements that one would expect to find in a gothic novel, Western or not? Just some of those elements, yeah.
Dark and twisted are the first two things that come to mind. There are heroes and villains and anti-heroes. And generally speaking, at least for me, the villain is usually more powerful than the hero is. It may not end up that way, but sometimes it does end up that way. There are also supernatural elements and horror elements. But horror today, especially in movies, a lot of that is based on, for me anyway, blood splatter.
Yeah.
In these stories and in The River Ghost, that is not what they're about. Hopefully I'm telling a story that has, you know, a lot of drive, a lot of character in it, and isn't relying on, you know, this other thing.
Yeah. And I think as you just listed things, and I'm like, oh yeah, check that. Yep. Got that. Yep. It's in there. And then there were things like omens are often part. And, you know, remember the ravens? There's like ravens.
There's always seems to be ravens in Gothic stories.
I like ravens. I like ravens in my stories. I've used them in a couple of others.
Yeah. So, and there's always, you know, there was always at least one good storm, isn't there? There's just like one, at least one good riveting storm.
You know, I go back to Edgar Allan Poe, you know. That's the first time I thought about ravens in a story.
Yeah,
you know?
Are there some Gothic writers that you really enjoy? And they could be, you know, when the Gothic sort of was born, or Gothic writers that you enjoy following today?
There are. For the classical writers, Bram Stoker, who wrote Dracula, Mary Shelley, who wrote Frankenstein, and Robert Louis Stevenson, who wrote Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Right.
Yeah.
These were inspirations to me. Some things I liked, some things I didn't care for. It's as much fun to write as it is to learn.
Yeah. You need to ask your question right now. Yeah, this really good question. Jen came up with a really good question a couple of hours ago, Tom, so okay. You don't know what's coming.
Yeah, I'm outside the dentist office waiting for Bobby, you know, and I'm thinking about tonight and the program. And then I hadn't had this before, and I thought, can an author writing a scary novel scare themselves?
Yes. You can write a novel where you can scare yourself, and you can also write one that can make you tear up. Uh-huh. It can make you laugh out loud. Oftentimes, just because of something completely unexpected. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's a great thing, where you surprise yourself somehow, mm-hmm. and you hope that it transfers to the reader. That's one of the reasons I enjoy writing.
When are you able to pick up, even if it's a classic and you're revisiting it? Wuthering Heights is in all the news right now. New movie opening tomorrow night, I think. Are you able to pick up that genre and read it as a reader, or are you trying to analyze it, break it down, edit it, wonder if, you know, would you have done something different with it, or can you just read it?
I can probably just read it. But sometimes I think I can't help but think to myself, well, I might have done that better.
Or yeah, there you go.
I wish I could write that well.
Yeah.
Good question, though.
Well, we you know, it's pretty, I hope it's obvious to you that we do read the book, don't we? Yeah,
we do read the book.
And this one, we just inhaled it. We just, you know, I just wished it was more pages because it was just such a fabulous read.
But we'll have to say the last two chapters were dynamite.
Yeah.
And that's where all the spoiler alerts are.
Yeah.
We're not going to say any more.
No spoiler alerts. You got to read the book. Tom, we're just going to step away for a moment to share news from our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. If you are a writer, they are standing by to assist you. And when we come back, we'll enjoy Tom's reading of a passage from his new Gothic Western you must get, The River Ghost. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. Special guest, Thomas Claggett. And we're talking about the River Ghost.
Oh, yes.
Before the break, we were talking about you reading a passage, maybe. Do you have one to read there, Tom?
Great. Yes, I do. This is a moment where Catherine Danaher, the heroine of the story, goes to Rosario Cemetery, which is in Santa Fe, to see the gravesite of her sister, who died unexpectedly. Tears ran down my cheeks. Wiping them away, I knelt down on the hard ground and laid the roses in front of the headstone. After making the sign of the cross, I said a prayer, asking God in his tender mercy to take my sister into the care and comfort of his arms. My mind became a jumble of thoughts. So many things I wish I had told Bridget, things I should have said. I drew a deep breath. Dearest Bridget, my thoughts began. Father went to the Lord first and mother followed. I always knew they would go before us. That's the way of things, how they are supposed to be. Our parents raised us, tried to show us how to be decent, respectful girls. Remember what mother used to say to us? Tell the truth, shame the devils, and use the brains God gave you. you should still be here teaching your own children those very things and telling them the bedtime stories Father used to scare us with. Your whole life lay ahead of you, watching your children grow up and live their own lives. Charles is, well, I don't want to say anything about Charles here. It would only upset you. I turned Charles from my thoughts and again to my sister. You know, I wish I could have told you about my orphan girls. Many a night they begged me to tell them a ghostly Irish tale. My girls, they would have made you laugh. But now I'll never hear your laugh again or see your sweet face in this life. I gently ran my fingertips over her name. The stone was cold and hard. Cold and hard. Those were three words that never occurred to me when I thought of my sister. Mm. My heart swelled. I closed my eyes and made a solemn vow to Bridget. I have no idea how long I will be here, but God helping me, I shall do all in my power to take good care of young Matthew and Anne for as long as need be. Danaher blood runs in them. My orphan girls will have to wait. Matthew and Anne need me more.
Very good.
That sets Thank up you. The story. Yeah, that sets is. Up the story.
That's great. You know, yeah. You know, I'm going to say that, you know, I come to that passage about the Rosario Cemetery. And I thought, well, how interesting. You know, we just buried a friend a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
And I thought, Rosario Cemetery. And I remember being there because I talked to the pastor about the cemetery. And he, of course, said it was the oldest cemetery in Santa Fe. Yeah. Right. So it's how interesting. You know, you talk about reading on the train, and we're going to Lamy, yes. And we're going to Santa Fe.
Yes.
Yeah, how apropos that was this book, huh?
Well, I know. And we went hit by Lamy, and I thought, oh, Lamy, the archbishop is named Lamy, you know? And I felt like I was with Catherine. She's a wonderful character, Tom. Just and you chose to write the book in her voice. It's written in first person.
Yes.
What was there a reason that you decided to do it that way?
This was the first book I had written in first person, and something told me, I have no idea why, something told me this story should be told by her, the entire thing through her eyes, yeah. Because it starts in Pittsburgh. She has to go to Santa Fe. She's a postulant with the Order of the Sisters of Mercy, and she's lived her whole life in Pittsburgh, and now she has to go someplace that is completely foreign to her. Mm-hmm. She knows nothing of the Spanish language, the customs there. It's bright, wide open blue sky. Mm-hmm. In Pittsburgh, it's a steel town, and the sky was almost always covered in, you know, blotted out by the black smoke. And soot was everywhere. So these were things very different. And then in Santa Fe, there's something unbeknownst to her that's waiting. And she has to face it.
Whoa, yes, there is. let's see. You did share it just a little bit ago about the turn of the screw. And that was the one thing that, as I was reading, I thought, oh, there's a little bit of something familiar to me. And later on, I kept, you know, thinking about it. And I was like, oh, this is a little bit like, it's not the turn of the screw, but it's a little bit like the turn of the screw. Yes, one of the other fun things that you do is in the time that we meet with her in Pittsburgh, and we're getting the Pittsburgh story, and she's on the train and remembering, she's kind of remembering back to things as you do when you're on a 2000 mile train ride. And she recalls time with her mom. And I loved that you talk about what they liked to read, and you bring in Charles Dickens, and mom didn't like those. What did you say? Those female tales.
Jane Austen.
Austen.
She, her mother felt that, these girls lived, in her view, somewhat pampered lives. I think she said something about they wouldn't know how to dig a square of peat moss out of the ground if their lives depended on it.
Well, and this year we celebrate along with the America 250. Jane's has the same 250. So in 1883 or before, when she was with her mom, Jane had already been, you know, again, here's the reading. Dickens is a kind of a contemporary, but Austen has already begun to make way as a writer, not a classic maybe yet, but a writer that they're reading who's later, you know, later on. She's not a contemporary writer of theirs at that time. And so I thought that was interesting that, that they were reading, not wanting to read.
Where did you actually first come up with the idea for the storyline? Did you always have that in mind, or and you decided to put it down, or all of a sudden did it just come to you?
No, it just came to me.
Okay.
It was the inspiration of The Turn of the Screw, and probably the movie that was based on it, called The Innocents.
Yeah, The Innocents.
Okay. With Deborah Carr. It's a Gothic story. And there's a lot of ghostly terror in it, and I was hoping that I could perhaps transfer some of that or more this story.
Now, you call Santa Fe home, so you must also feel very comfortable about setting it there, but you had to have done some research, Tom, even if you were looking at 1883 Pittsburgh. What were some of the things that you had to research in order to make sure you got the details right?
One of the things was to get a hold of the Sanborn fire insurance maps of Santa Fe, pretty close to, you know, around 1883, either a year or two before, a year or two after, just to know exactly where a lot of things were. I did have to invent the spot where the house is, where the children and their father live, that Catherine will be staying in. But I also needed to know, for example, what was around, what were the stores that were around the plaza at that time? And ideally, where were they? One of the things about those Sanborn fire insurance maps is that they were pretty darn accurate, which was a big help. And then I did, you know, a lot of reading of some nonfiction and some fiction to try to get a feel for what it, you know, what was there. And also other areas in town which don't exist anymore, but exactly where they were. And a lot of things have changed, of course. And surprisingly, some things have stayed very much the same.
And Pittsburgh, you probably had to do a little bit of study on Pittsburgh and on her train ride, because she has some things that kind of happen on the train.
I needed to find out which train line went through Kansas, because the train is stopped at one point because of a cattle herd that is crossing over, and the train simply had to wait. And so it was all wonderful to find these things out. Even though some of it took a while, it was still all very much worth it. I like to say that I enjoy the writing even when it's a pain in the butt.
You know, you talked about those maps. Sandstone, is that what you said?
What were the maps?
Sanborn. Fire insurance maps. Well,
who told you about those, or did you always know about those?
I probably first heard about them from Johnny Boggs, Johnny D. Boggs, fellow writer. Who also lives here in Santa Fe. He probably mentioned them, and I said, wait, what are those?
Yeah.
So he told me, and I went looking.
Tom, we're going to step away one more time, And we're going to tell our audience about one of the places that you can order books of many of our authored guests. And you can find those on our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And we're going to visit more with Tom and the River Ghost when we come back. Don't go away.
Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. We're talking to Thomas Claggett. And we're talking about the River Ghost, which Bobby is holding up in her hand right now.
Don't go to the river. Ooh.
Were there any characters or a character that surprised you as you were putting this together?
Yes, there were. Probably in particular, the character of Tom Catron, who is actually a real person. He's probably best known as a villain to history because of his involvement with the Santa Fe Ring, which was in New Mexico then and was stealing land and money, depending on who you talk to. And I thought he could fit well in my story, and it just felt like maybe it was him saying to me, whispering in my ear, "Don't make me a bad guy." And so I made him a decent person. Yes. He is very stern, but he is also very fair and honest with Catherine and the children and all.
Yes, which it surprised me a little bit when Catherine goes to meet him, and I thought, oh, he's going to be, you know, because his partner, Charles, the brother-in-law, you know, we've learned about him. And I thought, oh, he is going to be two of a kind. And it's like, oh, how interesting.
He turned out a little different, didn't he?
He turned out a little different. Yes, he did. So, you know, we love it when the author surprises us, too. I always believe that we as readers, we just trust the author. We just follow you wherever you take us. And if we stop doing that, that's when we put a book down, maybe. And we say, ah, it's not worth my time or, you know. But in every book we've ever read, we are delighted to follow the author. So when the author does something like that, oh, I was expecting this. Oh, but I got that instead. We just follow you all the more.
Thank you. That's one of the things I try to do when I'm writing is to give the reader the unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we do get some of that, don't we?
Yeah. Now, besides that character kind of tapping on your shoulder, was there anyone else who you just demanded to be in, or anyone who said to you as you were writing, "No, Mr. Tom, I would never say that," or "No, I would never do that"? Did you get any instruction from your characters?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think they were all pretty behaved.
Yeah, well-behaved characters. That's good.
And that would include, ironically, the River Ghost, the title character.
We're really trying not to do spoiler alerts. It's really hard. It's really hard.
You'll say that.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
We want to ask a little bit, talk about one of the characters. The first one, I guess, the main character, Catherine. You know, I have a kind of a strange question. You know, this is from a passage in the book. She's running for the train. She thinks to herself, "I'm running like a Protestant."
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Right. Well, how do you run like a Protestant if you're Catholic?
she is her Catholicism goes very deep. She's Irish, though born in the U.S. She is Irish, and it honestly seemed like a funny line and one that would let the reader ponder.
Uh-huh.
How is that exactly?
I've been pondering ever since I read it.
It's probably something it is for her running like a Protestant is very likely running as wildly as she has ever run in her life. Because this train is pulling away.
I think that's what we mean.
The other thing about her, and we meet her, of course, it's in her voice. We meet her page one, line one. She was a great storyteller, isn't she?
Yeah.
And she, when we meet her, first meet her, she is working with a girls' orphanage, and she has a number of young girls that she takes care of, and she loves doing that.
Right.
You start us off with Catherine telling a story. Will you just tell us a little bit? Because I think as we go through the book, we're wondering, is Catherine telling us a story? Like she told those girls a story? Oh, yes, no, maybe not. So you set her up as a fabulous storyteller. Just tell us a little bit about that part of Catherine.
Oh, thank you. it's very important because she tells one of the Irish ghost stories to her charges, the orphans, the girls. And it's so that the reader will know that ghosts, that she understands about ghosts, but you're not sure if she believes in ghosts yet. And that in telling this story, I tried to make it as horrific as I thought I dare without, you know, crossing the line.
Yeah.
Some of the girls are absolutely frightened to death, and others are just eating it up with a spoon. And Catherine is actually not supposed to be telling these stories because it's, you know, the orphanage is run by the Sisters of Mercy, and she's been warned by the Mother Superior about this, but she just can't resist because the little girls who range in age from about 6 to 13 just absolutely beg her to do it. Even the ones who are scared,
yes,
you know, holding the sheets up in front of themselves, they're still listening very hard.
Like many of us do. You know, if Jim and I happen to be at a movie or something that's somewhat, you know, I can't look. I watch his eyes because he doesn't look away. Or we're sitting on the couch watching something, I look over at him to see and listen for the music. You know, like, oh, okay, can I look now? Can I look now? So even though we're not wanting to participate at the same time, we do want to participate in that, don't we? You want to call out another character? Who else would we like him to chat about?
Well, first,
about?
Let's talk about this kind of a oddball character, Fletcher Fairchild.
Yeah.
He's a dime store novelist, and I think a little bit of a huckster, too.
Well, there it is. You hit the nail right on the head there. He was probably inspired by Ned Buntline, and He writes these incredibly wild and woolly types of stories, cliffhangers, but, you know, 1880s style.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually he runs afoul of the law in Santa Fe because he has a drinking problem. But this is how he gets through his life, and he has an interesting conclusion that I'm not going to tell.
Yeah,
it's in the book.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you know, sometimes when we introduce a minor character, you give this minor character a lot more story background. But when sometimes we introduce a minor character to deliver a heavy message, which he does.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what about Mrs. Madro-
Medrano.
Yes. Do you want to say something?
Mrs. Medrano is the housekeeper, and she's Hispanic. She wants to help. She loves the two children. She's reluctant at first to say anything about her employer, Charles. She comes to like Catherine. She has her own secrets. Mm-hmm. She's not Mrs. Danvers from Rebecca, but you know, there's something going on with her.
She's got history.
She's got
history. And then you have to tell us a little about Charles Preston.
Oh, Charles Preston.
Yeah.
He's a lawyer. Make of that what you will. And he is also possibly the scoundrel of scoundrels. And he's not a good guy. He's someone you love to hate, I hope.
Yep.
You know, but he starts out not too bad of a guy, though. It kind of goes downhill.
But mom never, when...
mom, she didn't like him,
yeah,
right?
That's very interesting. We learn as Catherine's remembering things that mom had told Bridget, who was Catherine's elder daughter, a sister. Mom had said to her, no, I don't trust him. You are not to be with him. You're not to go with him. And of course, what does Bridget do?
She doesn't listen, does she?
Doesn't listen to mom.
No.
Goes west, follows him, you know.
He runs off and elopes.
Mm-hmm, runs off and elopes. So there you go. So listen to your moms, everybody out there. Listen to your moms and dads. They often do know the truth, right?
Right.
Now, I have to ask about, there's a bell in the story. Is there a legend that exists about a bell like that? Or was that something from your fanciful?
No, that was a surprise story that I found out about during my research.
Okay.
It is at the San Miguel Chapel in the heart of Santa Fe. It was built back in the 1600s. And it's still here today. The bell is inside the church.
Ah.
It's too heavy to go into the tower where it was originally. And there's a crack in it from when it fell during the storm.
Uh-huh.
All of that I have included in my
fabulous
book. Because it was such a good story. And I thought this is wonderful. I had no idea.
Absolutely.
So I thought
absolutely
I have to include it.
Well, I'm just looking at time and we're fine, but we're going to just kind of wrap up this book. And once again, I just want to say, as readers, you can't put it down. You have to have it. There's somebody in your family or a good friend, or you have a book club or something where multiple people would probably enjoy reading and talking about this. Tom, we're going to just move. We're still with you, of course. Yeah. We just want to move a little bit into, sure, we're so interested because, well, of course, Jim right away wanted to know the story behind the cover. I'm trying to hold the cover up without all of our post notes in there. Tom, tell us a little bit about this cover design, if you will.
I self-published, and the cover design was done by a very talented man. His name is Eddie Vincent, and he does this as part of his living. He actually helped me get the entire book laid out and good to go. What he did was go on Shutterstock to find images, and the cover there is the result. I was as happy as I could be with that. The only thing that took us a little while was finding the right font print to do for the title, my name, etc. So yeah. I'm real pleased with it, and I think it's very effective and very eye-catching. And Eddie, may I say where he can be reached?
Oh, sure.
Yes, you can.
He can be reached at the following website, encgraphics.gmail.com.
Great. That's great. And
at gmail.com.
Why did you decide to self-publish, Tom? Or any thoughts about self-publishing you'd like to share?
Sure. The publisher that I had before, which was Five Star, had decided to close down.
Yeah.
So I went looking for a publisher for The River Ghost, which wasn't really ready until, you know, almost a year later. And it was hard to find something because The River Ghost is considered a crossover, being part Western, part Gothic.
Yeah.
I tried to find publishers who might be interested, and they decided they weren't. So I decided to go self-publishing, because self-publishing no longer has the stigma that it used to many, many years ago. Eddie helped me with this. I've been very happy. I've had another book published, self-published. It was nonfiction. So the difference between fiction and between having a publisher and not, is that there's a lot more work you have to do when you self-publish. You're responsible for everything that works as well as everything that doesn't. With a publisher, a lot of things they take care of, but you still have to do a lot of the work. You know, finding reviews, getting it out there to people and all. Publishing has changed a lot in the last few years, and it's still changing today.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you stick with it if you love to write. If you want to do is make $1 million, chances are you won't. But you might.
you do need
to have the love of writing.
Yeah.
Because it shows if you don't.
Yes. So what are you working on next, and where can people find you and follow you?
I'm working next on the further adventures of a female Pinkerton detective.
I introduced
her in my book, Blood West.
Blood West, okay.
And this will be called Blood Wrath.
Oh, excellent.
And I will follow me on Facebook and on my website, thomasdclaggett.com. My Facebook, Thomas D. Claggett, author, and my personal page, Thomas Claggett. I post updates on everything and when things will be coming out.
Yep.
Thank you for asking.
Absolutely.
And that's what I have. That's what I have. You can find me on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. They can order it through your favorite bookstore.
Yep.
And I encourage you to do so.
Yeah. All right. I'm just looking at time now. Jim, you've got a quote. We want to make sure. Yeah. Okay. Jim has a quote. Here we go.
We always like to take one from the book. Now, this is taken from a scene with Catherine and her niece, Anne. Anne is humming a tune. Catherine asks Anne, "What are the words?" Anne sang the words softly. "Come to me, children. Come to the riverside. Come to me, children. Do not try to hide." A shiver spiraled up my back, and the hairs on the back of my neck stood out.
And they did when I read that passage as well. I was right there with Catherine. Well, we are so delighted that you were with us tonight. This is episode 171 with our guest, Thomas D. Claggett, Tom to his friends. We want to say a thank you, Tom, for being with us. We want to say a thank you to Sam Hassan, owner of LA Talk Radio, our producer and engineer, celebrating LA Talk Radio's 18th anniversary. We want to thank our wonderful sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Next week, we will be joined with singer, songwriter, recording artist, Olivia Harms, and she's been taking her music. She was on that program On the Road, and we have known Olivia for a very long time, and we're really looking forward to next week.
Yep.
So join us next week. Jim, you have any closing thought?
Well, again, thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Jim. And, thank you, Bobby Jean. Thank you, LA Talk Radio, and Sam. It's been a pleasure.
Wonderful.
As we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep riding.
And we'll keep reading.
We'll see you down the trail. Yeah. See you next week. Bye. Bye, Tom.
Bye-bye. Thank you.